This is Dr. Tim Clinton. Thank you for tuning in today for this edition of Family Talk. Every day we strive to bring you programs that will help strengthen your family. And to do this, we need your help. We need your prayers. And we also need your financial contributions. You know that Dr. Dobson has been fighting for the family for over 40 years now, and he's not about to stop, believe you me. Here's Roger Marsh with more information on how you can support the ministry of Family Talk.
And friend, thanks to generous listeners like you, Family Talk can reach more and more listeners with practical help and encouragement. To support Family Talk with your best gift, go online to drjamesdobson.org or call 877-732-6825.
Today on Family Talk.
It is widely believed by historians that Abraham Lincoln was one of America's most influential leaders. As president, he made tough decisions during the Civil War, yet maintained his honest and respectable integrity. In spite of the fact that he mentioned God often in his speeches and writings, some dispute the authenticity of his Christian beliefs. Well, today you'll hear a presentation that explores the faith journey of this beloved commander-in-chief. Welcome, everyone, to Family Talk, a ministry produced by the James Dobson Family Institute. I'm Roger Marsh, filling in for Dr. Dobson on the broadcast, and today we're excited to bring you a presentation given by the late Dr. D. James Kennedy. He walks through the life and upbringing of Abraham Lincoln and examines whether he believed in Jesus. Dr. Kennedy also reads Lincoln's famous speech at Gettysburg and unpacks the spiritual meaning behind those words. Dr. D. James Kennedy was the lead minister at Coral Ridge Presbyterian Church for 47 years. His radio and television ministry, Truth in Action, still impacts millions of people. Here now is part one of his message that we've titled, Abraham Lincoln, the Faith of a President, here on Family Talk, a ministry of the James Dobson Family Institute.
Abraham Lincoln, worldwide, without doubt, the most beloved of all of our presidents. Though there are still some in this country that may have other opinions. Having been born in Augusta, Georgia, and lived 80% of my life in the South, I think I can speak about this matter without bias. The 16th President of the United States is without doubt everlasting in the memory of his countrymen. For on the battlefield at Gettysburg, he delivered what has been called the most perfect speech ever uttered, not by any president, but by any mortal man. Astounding. He was uneducated. A little home teaching at first, and then self-educated afterward. And yet, he could deliver such a speech as this. Now, all of you have heard, read, and probably some of you memorized the Gettysburg Address, but I wonder how many of you ever perceived what it really is. It is a lengthy personification of America into a person. A fetus, a born baby, a dedicated child, an adult, one who is facing great opposition, where people are trying to destroy him and others are willing to give their lives to protect and save him, and one who has a new birth of freedom, and one that will never perish. The whole life, from inception to eternity, is described in this magnificent personification. Listen to it again with perhaps new ears. 47 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. Now we are engaged in a great civil war, testing whether that nation or any nation so conceived and so dedicated can long endure. We are met on a great battlefield of that war. We have come to dedicate a portion of that field as a final resting place for those who here gave their lives, that that nation might live. It is altogether fitting and proper that we should do this. And yet, in a larger sense, we cannot dedicate, we cannot consecrate, we cannot hallow this ground. The brave men, living and dead, who struggled here have consecrated it far above our poor power to add or detract. The world will little note, nor remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here. It is for us, the living rather, to be dedicated here to the unfinished work which they who fought here have thus far so nobly advanced. It is rather for us to be here dedicated to the great cause for which they gave the last full measure of devotion, that we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain, that this nation shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, and for the people should not perish from the earth. Those last words, government of, by, and for the people, Lincoln, who, according to Theodore Roosevelt, mastered one book in his lifetime, and that was the Bible, found those words in the introduction to the Coverdale translation of the Bible. By the way, the words, one nation under God, a nation under God, that was the source of the words under God that were placed in our Pledge of Allegiance. He is everlasting in the memory of his countrymen. But today I would like to ask a deeper question. Is he everlasting in any more significant way? Some people have no hope other than perhaps they will be remembered by their children or grandchildren. I've asked many people what was the name of their maternal great-grandfather, and most people can't even tell you that. So my friends, if that's your hope, it's a very poor hope indeed. Christ offers us not merely a memory, but a living, vital, everlasting existence in heaven. Did Lincoln have that? And as we empathize with his lifelong struggles with spiritual verities in life and death and eternity, I hope that you will consider yourself, because the real question of this message is, are you a Christian? Maybe you'll see yourself in the life of Abraham Lincoln. Well, he was certainly born in propitious circumstances to become one. It was 1809, February the 12th, by the way, the same day as was born Charles Darwin. Lincoln did his very best to declare that all men are created equal. Darwin did his very best to declare that men weren't created at all. And there's a question about who will ultimately win out in that struggle. But it was in the midst of a fervent and religious revival taking place in Kentucky of the type led by evangelist Peter Cartwright. And in the midst of a prayer meeting, there was great enthusiasm, and a young man jumped to his feet and began to sing and shout and dance around. And after a few moments, a young lady jumped up also and did the same thing. And before long, they were holding hands and dancing around, and thus met Tom Lincoln and Nancy Hanks, who not long after that were joined in matrimony, and into which extremely religious and zealous family was born young Abraham and his sister Sarah. An interesting choice of names, Abraham and Sarah. And his mother was an extremely godly woman. Not only did they go to church every week, but she would set her son upon her knee every day and read to him the scriptures and encourage him to learn it by heart. And particularly she emphasized to him and had him memorize the Ten Commandments. In fact, he later said that whenever he was tempted to do anything wrong, he could still hear the clear clarion tones of his mother's voice saying, "I am the Lord thy God. Thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not bear false witness." And so impressed was he with the commandments of God that throughout all of his life, he endeavored to keep them. In fact, one time when he was keeping shop, a lady paid him a few pennies too much. He walked 2 miles to her home and 2 miles back to return those few pennies. He also endeavored to keep the fourth commandment. You all know what the fourth commandment is. Let's quote it. Abraham Lincoln never joined a church. I would that all the members of this church were as dedicated to honoring the Sabbath day as was he. Once, toward the end of the Civil War, he had gone to see General McDowell at Falmouth, and the general told him, "Mr. President, we are ready to make the final attack on Richmond, and we will be able to start on Sunday." He said that because he knew the president was adverse to beginning any military activities on the Sabbath. The president dropped his head, and after a long pause, he lifted his eyes and said, "General, take a good rest and begin on Monday morning." They were going to Richmond, the capital of the Confederacy, to end the Civil War, which he had for so long prayed and hoped and worked. But he would not defile the Sabbath of God to do so. Yes, he was a man who truly loved the commandments of God.
You're listening to Family Talk, a ministry of the James Dobson Family Institute. I'm Roger Marsh, and I hope you're enjoying this presentation from Dr. D. James Kennedy about the life of Abraham Lincoln. Did you know that Family Talk is supported by listeners just like you? We're able to bring classic broadcasts and newer interviews through your generous donations. Go to drjamesdobson.org and learn how you can make a donation online, or you find out how easy it is to give over the phone when you call toll-free, 877-732-6825. And now let's return to Dr. D. James Kennedy's message on the faith of President Abraham Lincoln here on Family Talk.
Was he a Christian? He was interviewed by a reporter who asked him that very question. "Mr. President, are you a Christian?" He said, "No, I am not a Christian. God knows that I would be, but I don't understand the Bible the way those preachers in Springfield who so opposed my election understand it." He said, "If I could just find a church which had carved on its altar, 'Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all of thy heart and mind and strength and soul and thy neighbor as thyself,' he said, I would instantly join it." But he could not, and he did not. And some of you will know that the problem was he didn't understand what the gospel was all about. As I said, Lincoln never joined a church. But according to an affidavit by his pastor, he had contacted the church and asked to be received on Easter Sunday morning. By the way, let me express my appreciation to New York Avenue Presbyterian Church in Washington, where Lincoln attended while president, for sending me copies of their historical documents and affidavits from their archives. I would also like to express my appreciation to William Johnson for his outstanding book on the subject, and F.W. Borman, who from all the way around the world in Australia has given us a magnificent presentation of Lincoln as he saw him. And I'd like to borrow the 3 points of Borman's outline and add one of my own later. By the way, you probably may not know that all of the Lincoln documents and memorabilia were given to his son Robert, who kept them in his possession all of his life, and in his will he said that these were not to be opened until 21 years after he, Robert, died. That was 1946. Therefore, we know a great deal more about Lincoln than your great-grandfather did. Amazing, isn't it? I'm sure you'll hear some things today that you didn't know. He had climbed the first mountain, which was Mount Sinai with Moses, and he made all of his efforts he could to keep the commandments of God. However, in spite of that, he was not a Christian. He was extraordinarily honest, though. As you all know, his nickname was Honest Abe. But I wonder if you ever thought about the fact that that's astonishing. He was both, don't get offended, please, both a lawyer and a politician. How many other lawyer politicians do you know that are known as Honest John or Jim or Harry or whatever? Honest Abe, and that is truly what he was. He had a young lady who told him what she thought of him as a young man. What was he like as a young man? Well, Lincoln said he one day looked at himself in the mirror and he said, "It is a fact, Abe, you are the ugliest man in the world. And should I ever meet a man uglier than you on the street, I will, as an act of mercy, shoot him dead on the spot." But as far as his personality was concerned, one young lady that he tried to date told him very plainly what she thought he was. She said, "Abraham, you are illiterate, self-opinionated, overbearing, and abominably ill-mannered." So what did Abraham Lincoln do? He set out to correct all of those faults. Was he proud? He was, but he turned to the scriptures. He still had his mother's Bible, and he searched the Bible and poured it into his heart, the Sermon on the Mount and all of the teachings, until he became the humblest president that we ever had. Astonishing transformation. He had climbed the second mountain, Mount Carmel, with Elijah in the age of clay, and now he was clay in the hands of God, who was molding him into something different. And that was a tremendous thing to see. Was he humble? Well, one time when he was president, he went to see General McClellan to appoint him as general of the most important of the northern armies, the Army of the Potomac. General McClellan was indeed himself an abominably ill-mannered man and an opinionated man, and he despised Lincoln. Lincoln and his aide arrived at his house, went in, the general was not there, they were seated in a drawing room, and they waited for a long time. And at length, the general came home, the butler told him that the President of the United States is waiting for you in the drawing room. McClellan went up the stairs, apparently to wash up to meet the president, but they waited for 15, 20, 30 minutes, and finally the butler went up again and came down shamefacedly and said, "I'm sorry, Mr. President, but the general has retired for the night." When they left the house, the aide said to him, "Mr. President, how can you possibly tolerate that abominable bore?" And Lincoln was surprised. And he said, "Why, if General McClellan could give victory to our armies, I would hold his horse." Lincoln learned a great many things, but one thing he never learned. He never learned to hate anyone. The most forgiving and humble man, indeed. In fact, I think this is so clearly seen in his humility and his compassion toward others when the war was over. on that day when the news came that the greatest of the Southern armies, led by the greatest of the Southern generals, General Robert E. Lee, had surrendered. When that word came to Washington, it gradually spread abroad. There was no radio or television, but the word went across the city very rapidly, and people began to file to the White House, and there were hundreds, and then there were thousands and thousands of people that gathered. And Lincoln, hearing of their presence, went out onto the porch in the midst of wild cheering and tremendous applause, which lasted for a good while until he stopped it. And the military band stationed there was gathered, and the director of the band said, "Mr. President, what shall we play?" The people were silenced. They wanted to hear what he was going to say. Would it be the Battle Hymn of the Republic, "Gather Round the Flag, Boys," or "Marching Through Georgia"? They strained to hear. A long silence. And then, in the midst of that enormous victory, when that long and bloody war had ended, Lincoln said, "Play Dixie." That probably says more about him than anything I could tell you. It was an act of compassion. He knew that there were millions of people in the South for whom the world had just collapsed. No bands playing in the South. But he reached out a hand of reconciliation. This is the man in that final cabinet meeting that afternoon. Said to his cabinet, a number of whom were determined that they were going to get the last drop of blood out of the South for causing this war. And they were going to grind them into the dirt. There would be massive recriminations, and they would pay. And Lincoln said, "There will be no recriminations." He went to the home of Jefferson Davis in Richmond. By himself, he went to the door of the house and knocked on the door. And a woman came out with a little child, a baby, in her arms. It was Jefferson Davis's wife and child. She told him that her husband was not home. And the baby was trying to take hold of this stranger. And he took the child in his arms, and she reached up and planted a very wet kiss right on his cheek. Lincoln gave the child back to her mother and said, "Tell your husband that for the sake of that kiss, I forgive him for everything." He never learned how to hate. He did learn how to forgive.
An incredible story to end day one of Dr. D. James Kennedy's presentation here on Family Talk. It's moving to think that a decade after Dr. Kennedy's death, his lessons are still impactful today. Learn about the various ministries he started by visiting our broadcast page at drjamesdobson.org. That's drjamesdobson.org, and then tap on the broadcast icon on the top of the page. While you're online, be sure to go follow our social media pages on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest. All of our accounts are full of godly content that you will want to engage with. You can like various pictures and articles we posted, or listen to our latest broadcasts. Simply search for Family Talk and like all of our profiles on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest. I'm Roger Marsh. I've been sitting in for Dr. Dobson today. Be sure to join us again tomorrow for part two of Dr. D. James Kennedy's message on the life and faith of Abraham Lincoln, right here on Family Talk, a ministry of the James Dobson Family Institute.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.
Roger Marsh here for Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. Are you listening on the go? Well, download the free smartphone mobile app for Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk today. It works with iPhones, it works with iPads, it works with Android devices, and best of all, you can get this program delivered to you every day. Now, this is a great way to stay connected to Family Talk. And not just the Family Talk broadcast, you can also join the conversation at our Family Talk Facebook page. You can also read blogs if you want. You can watch videos on topics like faith or family or the culture. You can even search for books and digital media in our resource center and much, much more. To get the mobile app for Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk, go to drjamesdobson.org and download it today. That's drjamesdobson.org.